of the people who are most concerned were the teachers. Home ec teachers weren't too sure what they'd do with boys in a home ec class.
Now, is this basically in junior high
junior
only?
High. That's
it
we
doesn't
start.
Follow through in high school.
We started it in junior high school because, see, it's a mandated program. Any place you mandate a program, you cannot separate them by sex.
Mm-hmm.
If you mandate the program, then they all must take it, and you cannot separate classes. So we said boys would take sewing and cooking. Now, boys picked this up fine. And the sewing part, well, you know, the first thing home economics teachers do is have them make an apron. So we had the boys make a nail apron. Anybody who's done a carpentry, you have a little nail apron, you have the tools in them. They made this. And then they found me, so you can buy a kit, you can make a jacket, and you can do all kinds of things. And they learned the sew. I've copped my own pants for years. That's nothing. It's easy to do that.
As far as high school now, can...
High school, we started with what course we call Bachelor Living. And then we changed it to Senior Survival, because bachelor sounds male and chauvinistic.
Mm-hmm.
So we call it Senior Survival. We had a lot of boys in there as to how do you live alone? You go out, how do you cook, how do you buy things? Priscilla Chapman was great on this.
It almost would be great to have that required course for every human being.
Right. Well, she went into a consumer program with State College of Framingham. I've been teaching down there for about 20 years in guidance courses.
Mm-hmm.
I've taught the graduate courses in guidance since 1963 there. So I was into the college level, and we worked a program with Priscilla, and we had some federal monies, and we developed this consumer education course. And out of that, of course, came a knowledge of how do you buy things. And boys ought to know how to go to the grocery store. I got two brother-in-laws who were hopeless, and their wives were great.
Just that. And it's all in training early. I had a question about your gym, when you're sharing your gym. You do that elementary school, also in junior high?
All classes in physical education are co-educational.
Right up through high school as well.
They start off, if there's a class of 75 kids in the high school, there'll be three instructors there, and it's a co-ed class. And they break down for activities, and there's certain activities that we do not, we don't wrestle, girls and boys don't wrestle on the mat. The girls do weightlifting in a co-ed educational course.
Mm-hmm.
They play tennis, they play tag football. And we got a weight. That's in physical education. Joe Mwenny and I started right away with this. Our program is not basketball in the winter, tag football in the fall, softball in the spring. We went into carryover sports. We went into archery. We went into more tennis. We went into golf. We bought some golf clubs, teach them how to play a little bit of golf. And some other kinds of activities. We put square dancing in. We put these things. All this has changed. So, you know, I've changed it.
Sure.
But it worked.
How do you see the difference now in sports, though? You mentioned something about girls' sports. I know...
Tremendous growth. The girls' sports here, we had practically nothing. When I came in 66, we had girls' basketball, and we had field hockey. We had nothing in... we had field hockey, field hockey and girls' basketball. And... excuse me. We didn't have field hockey. I put field hockey in. What the heck did they have? They just
softball?
Had girls... They didn't have. Yeah, they had softball. But I guess Bud Fisher put softball in. They had softball and they had basketball. They had nothing in the fall. So we put field hockey in because my Kathy graduated from here in '68, and she was the last class to graduate from the junior high school up here before they moved. And she played on the first field hockey team. She was the high scorer. She got one goal, and she thinks she kicked it in.
But that so field hockey came in.
Field
now
hockey,
what do we have? We have
okay. We now have in the fall volleyball. This is just for girls. Volleyball, cross country, separate program for girls. Field hockey, and girls soccer, which is now in its second year, and they're playing 16 games this year.
That's great.
They're playing two more games than the boys.
And the boys have.
Boys have football. We didn't have soccer. We put soccer in 1969 for boys. All we had was football.
Mm-hmm.
We have cross country. We put cross country in. They didn't have cross country in. We put cross country in. And in the wintertime, we put gymnastics in. They didn't have gymnastics.
Now, is that for everybody?
Boys and girls, two separate teams.
Mm-hmm.
We put those in the winter. And we had no junior high school athletics at all. We put junior high school boys and girls basketball. And we put junior high school, they had baseball at junior high, but nothing for the girls, so we put junior high school girls softball in. And they had no intramural programs at all. So I put intramural programs in all the way through.
Right through K, I mean, one through...
We put them in first in junior high school and then upper elementary, and then we phased them in to, as a matter of fact, it was John Lowe one night kept asking me, he said, well, why don't we have it for the little kids? Mm-hmm. So all we need is money, John.
So now what is it?
Well, we have for the elementary. We have primary, we have intramurals after school for Fales and Hastings. We have a program for boys and girls at Armstrong. We have a program, see, it's co-ed at Hastings and Fales.
Mm-hmm.
And then separate programs at Armstrong for intramural. We have a separate program in the junior high school, three seasons, boys and girls.
So it goes right up through junior high and intramurals?
Yeah, we don't have it in high school. We do, the phys ed people do some intramurals on a voluntary basis, but we got such a heavy athletic program up there. We got into the track. Now, we didn't have track here. They didn't have a track. They had no track program. So once we got the high school with the track, we started track in 1969. And that interscholastic track. And
how else, any other ways that this chapter
622 is the, well.
Affected. And also there's other chapters that may have, well, 766, is that another
okay,
one?
Okay, 766 is another thing. Okay, let's get into that one for a second.
Sure.
766 was special ed. When I came here, they had a special ed class. That special ed class was Ellen Bailey.
And that was for just...
We used to call them the MRs, the mentally retarded.
And what ages were in that one classroom? Just all
the entire
one class for all special ed needs?
And the system in those days was that the superintendent, after looking at test data, made a determination that the child had an IQ above an A, below 80, he assigned them to special ed, period. Parent, no parent, nothing, no input. He didn't want to assign a special ed. And then what did you do with them? It was local. Some towns were better than others. Ellen Bay was doing a good job here, but she couldn't cope with this. And what happens to those kids when they become 14 or 15? Yeah.
So what happened? When did Chapter
766? 766. So, gosh, it must have been 70, 71.
Mm-hmm.
When I came here in 66, I looked at not the, the, I felt that the mentally retarded, the poor kids with Down syndrome and all, they had recognized them. They weren't doing as well as I liked, but they were doing something. Nobody was taking care of remedial. There was no remedial reading in the school system, none. So I put remedial reading in. There was no speech therapy. So I put speech therapy in 1967.
The banner year around here.
The first year I shoved programs in the budget with school and Sky. We had, we put guidance in, we put speech therapy, we put remedial reading, and then I was teaching my course at Framingham in 67, 68, and I had Elaine Henderson, who was one of my students. She was working in Framingham as a special needs teacher. They used to call it perception handicap in those days, dyslexia or what have you. We talked about it and the thing, and I hired her. She was our first special needs teacher to work in perceptual handicap.
So how did this change? And also, what did Chapter
766 change? First, back when I was hiring these people, we were under the old Chapter 69 and 71, which used to reimburse us 50% for any money we spent on special education. Mm-hmm. So I said to Camilla, hey, we spend $10,000 for teaching, we get five back. It's a good buy for those kids. We start hiring staff. Then 766 came in and mandated that you identify these children, that the parents become involved, that you had a whole core evaluation, that they brought medical evidence in, nursing evidence, psychological testing, a whole bit. And we jumped on that right away. At that point, Mr. Baker, who was the guidance director, I made director of pupil personnel services and put special ed as well as guidance under that umbrella, which is a basic thing, which they were doing in Brookline and all the other places, civilized towards the east here.
So what did you end up with then? Or what do we have now?
Now we have, let's take Hastings. Let's take the, Hastings School. At Hastings School, we now have, under special ed, we have two special needs teachers. They meet with children who have a disability, a learning disability, diagnosed, and a prescription to remedy it with a particular number of times they meet with a teacher. They're pulled out of classes to go to the specialist, to kind of a resource room. We used to have one. We created another. We switched a person. We were starting to lose the special ed people, the retarded children. They're moving up. So, and frankly, what's happening in medical history, Down syndrome, we're not getting as many, and mothers are getting immediate synthesis, they're getting testing, and so
The severely retarded you don't see as much, or are they in a separate...
Severely retarded, very, very low IQ, who were institutionalized. There are other programs for them, and they come out, and there's another federal program and a state program. We're responsible for all children who live in this community, whose parents live here, from 3 to 21. And therefore, we have
that have learning disabilities.
You yeah, have any kind of learning disability. So we have preschool. We have a preschool. We have a teacher, a speech teacher, Janice Gaia, who works at preschool. Preschool speech problems, 3-year-olds. Should we get money out of federal? The federal 766 is a state law. The federal is 94-142. So we're using the federal monies that we get. We hire Janice. Be a speech therapist for preschool because we're responsible for those 3, 4, and 5-year-olds.
Then once they get to elementary school, you
we have two other speech therapists in elementary. We have Tina Brillard and Maureen O'Brien, and they work with other children. And they will actually work with a small number even at the high school. We have a lateral list.
So you have speech
we have
covered
free
and then
speech.
We have
at Hastings. We have two special needs teachers who work with. Children who may be in contact with them anywhere between one period a week as much as maybe 40% or so of the time. We at Fail School, we have two, Henderson and Colza Paul. At Armstrong, we have another special needs, special ed teacher, Marion, who works with the older children. See, now they make you group them no more than 3 or 4 years apart. So now you must move to another. You don't put 14-year-olds in with 7-year-olds in special ed.
So they have an older class.
Yeah, there's an older class at Armstrong, and we also have another teacher for special needs for that grade 6, those kids who have a special need. At the junior high school, we have a special needs teacher, Jenny Poor. We have a special ed teacher, Pat Horgan. At the senior high school, we have a special
Are they still in their own classrooms then?
Yeah,
basically.
They're in a resource center, and children come to them. The special ed teachers have the kids all day long. Special needs teachers get them in and out as their prescription for remedy fits. And at the high school, we have a special ed teacher, Mary Gardner, a special needs teacher, now it's Kathy Fowley, and we have a remedial reading teacher up there, remedial and developmental reading teacher, Joan Eames, at the high school. So we have three people in special ed at the high school. At the junior high school, we have the reading specialist, and then in the Armstrong School, we have the two people. Then the elementary schools, the Hastings and Fales, we have Bray, Florence Bray at the Fales is the remedial reading specialist.
You really now have covered.
I've got the whole thing.
The whole thing from actually age preschool
and
right up through high school.
In addition to that, because there is another. Title I program for, it was originally set up to run Head Start programs. And if you have an incidence of poverty in a community and you can identify it, the theory was that with poverty will come cultural deprivation, which would come learning.
Did Head Start help
Westboro
at all?
Yeah, well,
we never ran
what you call a Head Start program. But we used to take that money and we ran what we called a pre-primary transition program. When I first got here, Sally Gibbons started the first year. We didn't have kindergarten, so we had these kids going to public private kindergartens. We'd test them. This kid isn't ready for first grade. It's already been through kindergarten. So we'd take him or her into a pre-primary transition program, and we kept them for a whole year and got them ready for first grade.
Is that still in?
Now we use that program under special ed, and we examine all through the year, our kindergartners, and each year, 11 or 12 of those kindergartners will spend another year in pre-primary transition.
Do we have any other transition classes, or is
not
that
anymore.
Basically?
We started off the idea, I've played different ways. I used to have a transition between third and fourth. We finally, instead of putting the kid all day long in a transition class, we took the people and made them resource people, and we just take the kid out of the regular classes when he needs to brush up. If he's failing in math, if he's got a problem in language, or what, and we remedy what part of his education seems to be affected. Because some of the, it's up and down. They may be doing very well in other things.
Dramatic.
And have a little difficulty here. Rather than stigmatize them by sticking them in a room at the fourth, fifth grade, say, okay, you're left back, as they used to say in Boston. Now,
I just want to ask you about maybe the...
Well, I got one other. Title I. That's another one.
Title I
now, under the new programs, we had some children.
What does that mandate, or what does that...
It says that you have to identify your target group and then find children who have a learning problem which doesn't put them into the category of special needs, but they still have problems in mathematics and or reading. And so we hired a transferred Rita Warren Pasco. She's our coordinator, and she teaches children between 6th grade, 7th, and 8th grade. And we have Joanne Bellucci at Hastings this year, and she's working with children in elementary.
So this is remedial reading and
remedial math? Remedial reading and remedial math, primarily remedial math. And if we get about $29,000 of federal funds, we augment this with about $25,000 of town funds to run two teachers in grade 1 day.
On the opposite side of that, from the remedial math, now we're jumping to the flip side, which would be the introduction of computers is what I was going to talk about, too.
We have
and when did they come in?
3 years ago. And
1980,
I guess it was. We started with the computers by first getting a grant and using some federal monies, and we applied for it, and we used our occupational education. We put it in the business department in high school, because we felt those kids were going out into the field, and they better be familiar with a computer. But then we started to grow, and the math people obviously need this, and the science people need it. So we bought microcomputers. We bought Trash 80s, TRS 80s, Radio Shack on a bid.
We
got a whole batch of
them. This is for the math department in the high school?
Well, we first of all bought them for the science department, for the business department. Mm-hmm. And then we said, okay, as long as we meet the needs of the business kids, because they're going out in the field, then we had time that we could put into the math people. Then we bought some the next year, and we got into the Apple computer because of the language. Then we built a 3-year plan. Right now we have microcomputers in primary schools, Fales and Hastings. We have 5 in each of them now with a printer. We have the microcomputers at Armstrong. We have them in the junior high school. And we have 2 rooms for microcomputers in the senior high school. And we're offering courses there. There must be 7 or 8 different classes of computer. And we went to Data General, and they gave us a gift of what they call a mainframe computer, which we put up in the high school. It has 12 terminals. It's a really sophisticated computer. It's going to be primarily used by math and science teachers. Pat Senna, the math teacher, is running that resource room now.
So now will you say that Westboro is pretty up to date as
we
far
are
as
far as anyone else in Central Mass, in the computer business, and we're planning. We bought 17 new microcomputers out of the budget last year.
So that in each elementary school you have 5, in the Armstrong you have 1.
We have 5. We bought him 4 or 5. Right? Roger's got the exact number.
And in the junior high.
Yeah.
Same.
So really, we're into the computer thing to the point where we can give some kind of computer literacy to all of our kids, and then as they learn coming up, it's going to force us in the high school, of course, to be much more sophisticated, because these children are coming up to us. We got involved with Project Challenge at the ASIVET Collaborative. It's another whole new facet. We collaborated.
When did ASIVET become part of the school system?
When I got in here, they were sending kids occasionally to trade school in Worcester, 3 or 4 a year, almost discouraging them. So some of the superintendents, Roger Poole and I, from Northville, Southville, and some of the others, Ray Plotzik, who was up in Boylston at the time, and Ray Richer over to, he was in Marlboro then, we with some of the school committee, this would have been 66, 67, first year I was here, we started a form of coalition to see if we can get a good vocational school. It finally ended up at ASIPET Regional Vocational Tech.
When that was built?
Gosh, I'd have to check my records on that. I'm not going to get paid children's. It would have been back to around 69, I'd say. But in that time, we'd have to check that probably, the exact date. But at that point, we're partners with them. I know we.
Did many more in Westboro then choose to go?
No.
What's the percentage that choose to go to ASIPET?
Well, we had, we're entitled to 13.53% because that was the relationship of the population to the total population when we built the school. We agreed on that as part of our charter. Now, that would normally.
Southboro, Westboro, Northboro,
Hudson, Marlboro, Boylston. And so I just don't use it. But here's what happened. We're not taking advantage, full advantage of the program. We're entitled to about 52 or 3 kids a year over there. We probably send 30, 35. It'll vary. We're not using our total by any means.
You say our total is about 52?
About 52 a year. Mm-hmm. We are losing some children. Now, let's see.
What percent? Well, again, if you gave a profile of.
Since 73, this is it. Here was my 74 mm-hmm. report. Since 73, we averaged 35 a year of ASIPET. That was the best we ever did. So, but ASIPET's an excellent program.
Mm-hmm.
See, now, springing out of ASIPET's a vocational tech school, comes ASIPET Special Ed Collaborative. Of all the same towns, special ed directors, Bill Baker and the others, and the superintendents, and we hired a coordinator, and we run programs, and we combine on special ed programs. Like, for example, if we had a very severely retarded child who is blind or deaf or something, and Marlboro had 3, and they were running a special program, we could tuition a kid to that program.
Ah.
And they, in turn, can send some back to our program, and we exchange. We run an alternative high school for those children who simply can't adapt themselves to the regular high school for any number of reasons, primarily discipline. We run the MOVE program for kids who, they come in and they go to school part of the day, they go out and they work in the fast food industry the rest of the day, they're potential dropouts.
Sure.
We hired people to work with the kids who were returned from institutions.
Again, you're pooling your resources. And
yeah, pooling it up.
I just have another question a little bit when you were talking about who goes to ASIPET and who doesn't. What would be a profile of Westboro High students? Would most of them go to college, or who are we dealing with? If you're talking, when I'm getting out of an overview of a kid in Westboro.
The kids that are up there, you're getting 75% or so to 80% who are born to some kind of post-secondary schools. And to get the specifics, you probably ought to talk to Earl, who has all these data. But
and how is Westboro, for instance, different from other school systems? And is it much, let's say, comparing Westboro with a city or a small town? Even.
We're
pretty
close to them in the neighborhood here to the type of a student that Algonquin has. We're.
But let's give kind of a general profile of what Westboro.
It's a rather affluent community now as compared with possibly where it was in relationship. For example, if you look at the data for the Worcester County average income, the last set of data I had with 60 different communities, we were 5th. The attitude towards post-secondary education is very high in this community, and therefore we have bright kids. We do send quite a few on to post-secondary education, quite a few to 4-year colleges, quite a few to nursing and to 2-year schools mm-hmm. and the like. We are concerned about the kids who do not go on to school, and that's a new program we've just gotten another federal grant for.
What is that?
To help work with those kids in occupational information who aren't going on to school. And again, using this computer and helping them find jobs and the like. I dropped off at one point.
Oh, your Project Challenge is what you...
Well, Project Challenge is part of ASIPET's collaborative. We got together and we said we'd get a good summer school program going for these enriched, bright kids who don't want to hang around and do nothing all summer. These elementary children primarily. So they used our computers, and then they borrowed some from Hudson and from Marlboro and so on, and we ran a tremendous program at Hastings School the last 2 summers with courses for all kinds of courses for enrichment. This program is going. We have run summer schools for our high school students in the evening. We're the only school system around that runs an evening high school in the summer. So for kids who need remedial work, they can make up a lack of a passing grade in algebra or something. We run an AM summer school program and remedial for those children in elementary and junior high who need a remedial program. We're combining with an enrichment program for the bright kids. And the only thing that bothers me now, we're having problems with our adult education. Adult education, it doesn't seem to be going.
The evening summer school and remedial for the students is doing all right. When did that go in?
Well, Mr. Baker used to run a state summer school evenings, and the state withdrew their funding, and I picked it up immediately the next year, I think about 69. So we've been running that. That's a need. Lot of stuff went in here from 66 to 69.
This town must have been spinning,
into the 20th century.
And therefore, then you also have you do offer adult education throughout the year as
we
well?
We don't, because when 104% tax cap and 2.5 came in about 5 or 6 years ago, and we started to have to really tighten up our budgets, the committee put these on a self-sustaining basis. Mm-hmm. We don't put any budget money in. We aren't able to get anybody. I'd like to get somebody to run that program, but they have to run it and pay themselves and their staff out of the proceeds. So what's happening with combining with Priscilla True and call it over here at the Y,
they're
running the sewing and they're running some craft programs at the high school, and we're letting them use our equipment. We're renting it reasonably tight.
We get into
sharing too. I worked with Fisher Junior College. They wanted a satellite program.
When was this?
5 or 6 years ago at the junior high. We offered them at a very low price for use of the annex up there, and they ran that program for several years until they moved over to the Forbes building.
Right. Basically, they were using
renting space from us,
renting classrooms,
to run their business 2-year business course, and we worked out a deal with Worcester State Continuing Studies, Worcester State College, to run computer courses for adults. Primarily the people in the computer business themselves, and our people took advantage of it, our teachers.
Is that still going
on? That's about 3 years. That's still going on.
And that's held
at the high school. And they, we use our computers up there. We lend them our microcomputers. They put computers in. They share with us. We've had our staff teach for them. It's a good relationship between Worcester State and us, and it was an excellent relationship with Fisher Junior College, and now they're on their own downtown, and again, helped us.
Central New England's coming in, although not sharing, but there seems like...
Well, I've talked to Paul Ryan, who's the dean up there, and he's once they get into the Lyman School area, and get their building started, we're going to be sharing courses with them. We've already talked about this and worked out, it's tentative at this stage, but we'll probably be able to offer college-level courses to our high school students during the day.
Recently, Westboro now has gone into more post-secondary facilities in the area itself, and maybe...
Why
do you think that's happened?
I think the need is here. I think the population here recognizes this, and you've brought the college to them instead of having them go to the college. You make it a lot more...
Which means that the people here and in surrounding towns are interested in continuing their
education. Education is something that's going to continue the rest of your life. So they're very interested in taking coursework. And of course, the computer thing is running away. They say by year 1995, there'll be a computer in everybody's house, and you're going to be ordering your stuff on a computer.
You're beginning to train Westboro kids, so they'll be able to do
They're going to be familiar with this. When my youngest daughter went to MIT, that was 1970, she hadn't seen a computer. And all the kids from Bronx High School of Science were flying through these things.
Sure.
And, that isn't fair to our kids.
Right.
And now they're going to be sophisticated. One thing I missed way back here in about my programming, I did a couple of other things, too. I was talking about elementary. They had no department heads in this school system when I got here. They had, for some reason or other, an English department head at the high school. They hired the year before I came.
But in the high school itself?
No other department heads. So we had created the department head system and gave them responsibility, which includes evaluating staff and curriculum work and budget work. And we have department heads in the high school and junior high.
Okay.
We also went and took another look at our fifth and sixth grades when we started to grow, and when we had the sixth grade at Forbes and the fifth grade at Armstrong, we created what we called semi-departmentalization.
Mm-hmm.
We finally said the curriculum was going so fast that you get a teacher in the fourth grade, you expect to teach English, math, science, social studies, etc. Now to the fifth grade, it's even getting faster. So we decided, with the staff, let's have a teacher or teachers teach reading and language arts only. Let's have other teachers just teach math and science only, and other teachers just teach social studies. So we had three basic departments there.
Fifth and sixth.
And so we started that when we had the facilities. I had two separate buildings, Armstrong for fifth and Forbes for sixth. Then when we started to lose our numbers and I closed the Forbes school, we put the fifth grade back to the primary schools and we put them back into the team teaching model. And now we just have the semi-departmentalization at the sixth grade, which is now at Armstrong.
They have three
team leaders.
One thing that seems strange is that there is a fragmented look to Westboro's school system in that K through 4 for many years were in elementary schools. Then the fifth grade was in a separate school, Armstrong,
yep.
And the sixth grade was in Forbes School. And
it seemed very rare and odd. Your programs work on the basis of your facilities. Now, we had a few things fail here.